If a man did not have this knowledge or attentiveness to God, he would, as a consequence, be neither doing anything nor receiving anything. Having left the discursive meditation of the sensitive faculties and still lacking contemplation, the general knowledge in which the spiritual faculties, memory, intellect, and will are actuated and united in this positive, prepared knowledge. He would have no activity whatsoever relative to God. For a person can neither conceive nor receive knowledge already prepared for him, save through either the sensitive or the spiritual faculties. With the sensory faculties, as we affirmed, a person can make discursive meditation, seek out, and from knowledge from the objects, and with the spiritual faculties, he can enjoy the knowledge received without any further activity of the senses. The difference between the functions of these two groups of faculties resembles that existing between toil and the enjoyment of the fruits of this toil, between the drudgery of the journey and the rest and the quiet, gladdening its end, or again between cooking a meal and eating without effort what has already been cooked and prepared. It is like the difference between receiving a gift and profiting by it. If the sensitive faculties are idle as to their work of discursive meditation, and the spiritual faculties as to the contemplation and knowledge received and formed in them, is no basis for asserting that the soul is occupied. This knowledge is a requisite then in order to leave the way of discursive meditation. It is noteworthy that this general knowledge is at times so recondite and delicate, especially when purer, simpler, and more perfect, spiritual and interior, that the soul does not perceive or feel it, even though employed with it. This is especially as when, as we affirmed, this knowledge is clearer, simpler, and more perfect, and then this knowledge is still less perceptible when it shines upon a purer soul, one freer from the particular ideas and concepts apprehensible by the senses or intellect. Since the individual lacks the feelings of the sensitive part of the soul, by not possessing these particular ideas and concepts which the senses and intellect are accustomed to act upon, he does not perceive this knowledge. For this reason, the purer, simpler, and more perfect the general knowledge is, the darker it seems to be, and the less the intellect perceives. On the other hand, the less pure and simple the knowledge is in itself, although it enlightens the intellect, the clearer and more important it appears to the individual, since it is clothed, wrapped, or commingling with some intelligible forms apprehensible to the intelligent intellect or to the senses. The following example is a clear illustration of this. In observing a ray of sunlight stream through the window, we notice that there is more, it is pervaded with particles of dust, the clearer and more palpable and sensible it appears to the senses. Yet obviously, the sun ray in itself is less pure, clear, simple, and perfect, in that it is full of so many specks of dust. We also notice that when it is more purified of these specks of dust, it seems more obscure and impalpable to the material eye, and the purer it is, the more obscure and inapprehensible it seems to be. If the ray of sunlight should be entirely cleansed and purified of all dust particles, even the most minute, it would appear totally obscure and incomprehensible to the eye, since visible things, the object of the sense of sight, would be absent. Thus the eye would find no images on which to rest, because light is not the proper object of sight, but only the means through which visible things are seen. If there is nothing visible off which the ray of light can reflect, nothing will be seen. If the ray, then, were to enter through one window and go out through another, without striking any quantitative object, it would be invisible. Yet the ray of sunlight would be purer and clearer than when, on account of being filled with visible objects, it is more manifestly perceived. The spiritual light has a similar relationship to the intellect, the eye of the soul. This supernatural, general knowledge and light shines so purely and simply in the intellect, and is so divested and freed of all intelligible forms, the objects of the intellect, that it is imperceptible to the soul. This knowledge, when pure, is even at times the cause of darkness, because it dispossesses the intellect of its customary lights, forms, and fantasies, and affects a notable darkness. When this divine light does not strike so forcibly, a person apprehends neither darkness nor light, nor anything at all from heavenly or earthly sources. Thus he will sometimes remain in deep oblivion, and afterwards will not realize where he was, nor what occurred, nor how the time passed. As a result, it can and does happen that an individual will spend many hours in this oblivion, yet upon returning to self, think that only a moment or no time at all has passed. The purity and the simplicity of knowledge is the cause of this oblivion. While occupying a man's soul, it renders it simple, pure and clear of all the apprehensions and forms through which the senses and memory were acting when conscious of time, and thus it leaves the soul in oblivion and unaware of time. Although, as we asserted, this prayer lasts a long while, it seems of brief duration to the individual, since he has been united with pure knowledge, which is independent of time. This is the short prayer which, it is said, pierces the heavens. It is short because it is not subject to time, and it penetrates the heavens because the soul is united with heavenly knowledge. When the individual returns to himself, he observes the effects this knowledge produced in him without his having been aware of this. These effects are an elevation of mind to heavenly knowledge, and a withdrawal and abstraction from all objects, forms and figures, as well as from the remembrance of them. David declared that such was the experience upon returning to himself after this oblivion. I became conscious and discovered that I was like the solitary sparrow on the housetop. By solitary, he refers to the withdrawal and the abstraction from all things, and by the housetop, to the mind elevated on high. The soul remains in consequence, as though ignorant of all things, since it knows only God, without knowing how it knows. For this reason, the bride in the Canticle of Canticles, when she states that she went down to him, numbers unknowing among the effects this sleep and oblivion produced in her, saying, "I knew not." As we mentioned, it seems to a person when occupied with this knowledge that he is idle, because he is not at work with his senses or faculties. Nevertheless, it must believe that he is not wasting time, for even though the harmonious interaction of his sensory and spiritual faculties ceases, his soul is occupied with knowledge in the way we explained. This is why also in the Canticle of Canticles, the wise bride responded to one of her doubts. This is like saying, "Though I, according to what I am, sleep naturally by ceasing to work, my heart watches supernaturally in its elevation to the supernatural knowledge." But one should not think this knowledge, if it is to be all we said it was, will necessarily cause oblivion. This forgetfulness occurs only when God abstracts the soul from the exercise of all the natural and spiritual faculties. Because such knowledge does not always occupy the entire soul, this forgetfulness is less frequent. This knowledge we are discussing only requires abstraction of the intellect from any particular temporal or spiritual knowledge, and is unwillingness to think of either. For then we have a sign that the soul is occupied. This sign is necessary for recognizing this knowledge when it is applied and communicated only to the intellect, for then sometimes it is imperceptible. When, however, there is also a communication to the will, as there almost always is, an individual will not fail to understand more or less his being occupied with this knowledge, if he wants to discern this, for he will be aware of the delight of love without particular knowledge of what he loves. As a result, he will call it a general loving knowledge. This communication, consequently, is called a general loving knowledge. For just as it is imparted obscurely to the intellect, so too a vague delight and love is given to the will without distinct knowledge of the object loved. This explanation is sufficient at present to understand the need for this knowledge before one leaves the way of discursive meditation. and for the assurance that, despite the apparent idleness, the soul is well employed if these three signs are noticeable. It is also sufficient for an understanding of how the representation of this light in a more comprehensible and palpable way is not a sign of its greater purity, sublimity, and clarity, as was demonstrated through the example of the ray of sunlight permeated with dust particles and thereby perceptible to the eye. Evidently, as Aristotle and the theologians assert, the higher and more sublime the divine light, the darker it is to our intellect. A great deal can be said about this divine knowledge, both as to its nature and the effects it produces in the soul. We are reserving this discussion for its proper place. There was no reason for such a lengthy treatment of it here, except that what we are desirous of leaving this doctrine somewhat more vague than it is. Certainly, I admit, it is very obscure. To the fact that it is a subject seldom dealt with in its style, in word or in writing, since in itself it is supernatural and obscure, can be added that of my unpolished style and lack of knowledge. Doubtful of my ability to make myself understood, I am often aware of exceeding my limits required for a sufficient presentation of this doctrine. I confess that I sometimes do so intentionally, because what is not understandable with one reason may become so by others. Also, I think that such procedure will give such clarification to later explanations. In conclusion, I think a question concerning the duration of this knowledge should be answered. I shall do so briefly in the following chapter.